Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's a little bit later on when we talk more Bears with Hub Arkish of The Score and Pro Football Weekly. We're going to talk Bulls here in just a second. I'm Mark Grody here with you until midnight, at which time the Grobber takes over for Score Overnight. 312-644-6767, the number. I am textable, 67011, and you can find me on Twitter 24 hours a day. That's right. I'm on Twitter 24 hours a day. At Mark Grody Sports is the way to do it. You can find this guy on Twitter at ShoeMouse. And David, driving back now from a Bulls loss to Portland, 118-98, a very interesting starting lineup for the Bulls. But first, Shoe, tell us about the injury to Lauri Markkanen. The details, please.
All right. Well, first of all, he is officially done for the season. The Bulls confirming that in a release a couple of hours ago. And basically, it stems from what happened in last night's game up in Toronto. They wanted to do some tests. He was fatigued. His coach, Jim Boylan, and other people who were at the game, they noticed it very quickly that he just did not look like himself, and he was laboring running up and down the court. So they took him for some tests to the hospital after the game. And bottom line is, the test came back with good results, but they're checking for a rapid heartbeat. They're checking for excessive fatigue. And they're going to do other tests now over the next 10 days to 2 weeks. And since the season literally ends 2 weeks from tonight, there's no point in bringing him back. And it's mostly precautionary. They don't think that there's anything really wrong, hopefully nothing wrong. But, again, it's mostly precautionary. It's the wise course of action. And honestly, Mark, I think the lineup that you saw tonight is pretty much what you're going to see the rest of the way, because Otto Porter Jr., highly unlikely to play anymore this season. Zach LaVine is iffy at best. And Chris Dunn, you know, has got that lower bad back, so you might not see any of these guys the rest of the season. But Markkanen is officially done for the season.
Yeah, I mean, the starting lineup tonight was interesting. I mean, you have if you're just like checking back in with the Bulls, like you haven't watched for a while. I mean, you know that there's injuries and you know that the season is a bust, but you just turned it on tonight and then you see in the opening intros. First of all, Robin Lopez is the last guy intro, so that's where we are right now. But Shaq Harrison, Brandon Sampson. Stop me when you know somebody. Antonio Blakeney, also, I said Robin Lopez, and then Seldon Jr. too, right? Wasn't he the fifth starter?
Yes.
And let's not forget Timothy Luahu Cabaret coming off the bench as well.
Yes. You have to be a super basketball junkie to know a lot of the members of the current Bulls, certainly the roster that was out there tonight. And it's really interesting because Elkins and Sampson were supposed to play for the Windy City Bulls in tonight's game, their first playoff game in franchise history, and they had to be pulled off that roster to play for the big Bulls tonight because otherwise the Bulls would have only had seven healthy bodies.
So they rushed them in, huh?
I'm sorry?
They rushed them into the United Center tonight, huh?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if, you know, it was, they didn't make the plane going out, or I don't know how, you know, literally the genesis of that. But the fact remains, and they said it was a tough decision because they really wanted to get these guys some quote-unquote playoff experience. But honestly, I think playing in the NBA is even better than the G League playoff experience, and I'm sure that was the decision that they came to. But, yeah, it was really, really strange. There's really no point in talking about the game, even though Portland didn't play very well. Come on, they had an NBA roster, whereas the Bulls didn't have a complete NBA roster tonight, pretty plain and simple.
Who was that one guy from the Blackhawks last year that, like, was just a dude on the Hawks? Like, did the Bulls have one of, like, a counterpart to him?
You know, it's really interesting because that guy, you're talking about the goaltender who sits up in the stands just in case
right.
And has to come down, of which happened. And actually, he works for a company downtown that my son also works for.
Oh, really?
And, that was the really, extra strange part. But, yes, and I don't know if the Bulls need to have somebody like that. They do have the G League at their availability, and like I said, they needed to use it tonight, and that's what happened.
Let's get back to Lauri Markkanen and his injury. Again, he's shut down for the rest of the season. When we say rest of the season, that entails all of six games. But I guess the part that is alarming to this, and it's obvious that when you hear something like elevated heart rate, you take note, and I guess the test came back good, but is there any kind of history of this, and is it more commonplace than I think?
Well, we have heard of a lot of instances. I names don't come to mind, unfortunately, right now. All you got to do is Google rapid heartbeat or heart problems in the NBA, and I'm sure there'll be a long list. We were told that there has been no history with him in the past. And as far as we know, no family history either, although I can't confirm that. Again, it's a precautionary thing. He's only, I think he's still only 21, 22 years old. It's unusual for this to happen, but it's not completely unheard of at the same time. So, again, discretion being the better part of valor, and the fact that the Bulls are completely out of it anyway, that's why not only is Markkanen done for the season, rightfully so, but I think a lot of those other names that we mentioned earlier, they're probably done for the season as well.
Yeah, so that said, the Bulls, I think right now, if I have my math right, the Bulls are a game and a half back of Cleveland for third worst record in the NBA, and you want to be in that top three to get the best shot at the number one or even number two pick at this point in college basketball. Six games to go for the Bullies, seven games to go for the Cavaliers. Do you think there's a chance that the Bulls, I can't believe I'm asking a question, is there a chance the Bulls can become the third worst team in the NBA this year, David?
It's possible, but if you take a look at Cleveland's schedule, they have some games that they're not winning either, to be honest with you. I think they do play Phoenix one time, so that's a battle of dreg teams. The Bulls, of course, play the Knicks in the final home game of the regular season.
Yep.
That's a potential win, but the Bulls, they're not going to win many, if any, games the rest of the way, but the same thing is true for Cleveland. I know a lot of people make a big deal out of finishing in the bottom three, and rightfully so, because math is math. I mean, it's another 1.5 percentage points in your favor of getting that top pick. And even more so, if not for the top pick, the second, third, and fourth pick, it's all a percentage computation anyway. If the Bulls get either the first or the second pick, the franchise and the city will be ecstatic, because obviously Zion Williamson, no matter what, will be the first pick. But if Ja Morant is the consolation prize at number two, you're hitting a home run, because from what I've seen of him, and I'm not just talking about the NCAA games, I'm talking about his body of work this whole season, and I'm going off other people's thoughts who have seen a lot more of him in person than I have. That would be a hell of a consolation prize. And honestly, right now, he might even fit better into the roster, because I think the Bulls do need somebody like a Ja Morant on their roster. Zion Williamson, it would still automatically, for every team in the NBA, be the number one pick.
Yeah, so you don't think any team would try to get cute at this point and try to outthink themselves and go Ja Morant on this situation?
No, I don't think that would be the case. It would be interesting, though. Let's just say Cleveland gets the number two pick. Now, obviously, they have invested a lot in Sexton, their point guard, who's had a pretty good season. I haven't noticed much of him lately. I don't even know if he's playing right now, but he's been really good. So, I mean, would they go after a point guard for the second straight year? Would they trade the pick maybe to the team that's number three, which might be the Bulls? I mean, anything is possible. I love the NBA draft, much like I know you love the NFL draft. There's always some strategy and things that happen that just make it really interesting. So, I don't want to look too far ahead, but that'll be an interesting night. First of all, the draft lottery in Chicago on May 14th.
Oh, yeah.
And who knows what happens that night.
Where's that being held?
I'm not sure. Last year it was at one of the downtown hotels.
Yeah.
I don't know where it is
okay.
this year. I'm not sure.
Okay. Do you think Zion – I was thinking about this. Is Zion Williamson the most sought-after big man since Greg Oden?
Well
– who am I missing? I'm probably missing somebody. But I'm just thinking – like Oden was similar to Williamson in that, like, he had that man body already, and it was like a can't miss, like, the big man is back, and it's Greg. We haven't seen a big man like this in Like, the hype was maybe a little bit similar to that of Zion Williamson. I don't know if there's been another big man that has had that kind of hype. Has there been?
Well, first of all, Odin was 7 feet at least, probably 7'1". Williamson is only 6'7", but he's probably 6'7" wide also. He's what you call on the highway a wide load. So, you know, again, there's a difference of about 6 inches in height. But you're right when you say man's body, because Zion Williamson is an absolute freight train. He's more like LeBron James,
yeah,
who also was a freight train coming literally out of high school and has had that man's body for God knows how long. It's interesting. You make mention of Odin, who did go number one, and Durant went number two. And obviously Durant has had well on his way to an NBA Hall of or a Basketball Hall of Fame career, whereas Odin unfortunately had the injuries. I thought Odin was the logical pick that year too, because he was so dominating on both ends of the court, actually. But unfortunately, he had the injuries, and the rest is sort of history. And Durant has gone on, like I said, to have a Hall of Fame on his way career. But I think Williamson, as long as he stays away from injury, he's just too damn good and performs some things that are just, you know, eye-catching, I guess, is the best way of putting it. He should be an absolute stud in the NBA, but I'm not so sure that Ja Morant won't be the same kind of stud in the NBA also. I think his game will only get better in the NBA. He's got to continue to work on his shooting. But I'll tell you what, he handles the ball like it's a string on his hands. He has complete court vision. It's almost like Patrick Kane has got the best peripheral vision that I can remember in a long time on the ice. John Morant's got that same thing in a basketball court. He can see everything, and he passes with both hands, and he's very, very, very unselfish, and he's got a great mind for basketball. So like I said, if the Bulls get one or two, they should be extremely happy.
Talking to the Scores, David Schuster diving back from the Bulls' loss to Portland, 118-98. I'm Mark Rohde here until midnight. All right, Shu, check me out on this. I got an idea for Fred Hoiberg. I want to run past you, and I want to hear what you think of this. So Hoiberg has been linked to the, I'm sure you have heard, for the Nebraska job. He, of course, had really good success at Iowa State as a college coach. A lot of people think that that's where he's best suited. It sounds like, though, like some stories say that Hoiberg absolutely wants to stay in the NBA. And here's the team I think Hoiberg would fit in perfectly. That would be, ready for this, the Los Angeles Lakers. If Luke Walton goes, and if Magic Johnson is able to build a super team there, obviously he's got LeBron. If he gets Kawhi Leonard, maybe a Klay Thompson or a Kyrie Irving, is there a better fit? In my opinion, Fred Hoiberg would be perfect. That Steve Kerr relaxing presence, a guy that doesn't care if a player actually runs the team, and that would be LeBron James in this case. What do you think about Fred Hoiberg, coach of the Los Angeles Lakers? Am I crazy, Dave?
No, you're not crazy, and you did have the two magic words, and the two magic words are in my opinion, the best basketball player on the planet. That's LeBron James. And LeBron James, ultimately, I'm pretty confident in saying, will decide who the next coach of the Lakers will be. He'll decide what players that, you know, they end up recruiting. He'll also decide the head coach. I just think that he's got that cachet with that organization already. I don't know what kind of relationship he and Fred Hoiberg had. You're right. I mean, Fred Hoiberg is an easygoing kind of guy who still knows basketball.
Yes.
And didn't get a lot of the credit that he deserved. I didn't think he should have been fired at the time. He just didn't have the roster. You know, there was probably other reasons why he was let go at that time. But, you know, nobody would have won at that juncture earlier this season. I don't care who you are. Phil Jackson in his prime, Red Auerbach in his prime, the roster that the Bulls trotted out before he was fired with all those injuries, nobody had a chance. But again, there might have been other reasons other than the wins and losses why he would let go.
Well, right, and then you had that the Alpha Bulls in his first year, right? Was it his first year with the Jimmy Butler and Dwayne Wade? And who's the point guard? I can't think of his name off the
Rondo.
Top. Rondo. When you had that Alpha team, it was like he never. So I will say that maybe Fred Hoiberg didn't know how to deal with NBA players, but I got to believe that if you went into LA with LeBron James and you just allowed, there's a need to be conflict between coach and LeBron. Let LeBron run things and let Hoiberg institute some of his offensive concepts and be that calming presence. I think it'd be good. And I think it was Christopher Dickens who might have pointed out, and then Luke Walton becomes the head coach of the Chicago Bulls.
Well, you got it all figured out already.
Yeah.
By the way, Fred Hoiberg can get along with NBA players. First of all, he was an NBA player, number one, and he also worked in the front office, so I didn't see him having really any problems.
Okay. Okay.
With certain players?
Yeah.
With certain players, any coach might have problems.
Right.
That's plain and simple. Luke Walton will get another job in the NBA. I don't know if it's going to be with the Bulls, and I still think Jim Boylan at this point will be the Bulls coach at least to start next season. Who knows what happens after that, because the Bulls do go through coaches periodically. But you know, listen, I like Fred Hoiberg, but I think it's fait accompli. I think Fred Hoiberg will be the Nebraska coach, and I wouldn't doubt that that announcement doesn't come over the next 24 to 48 hours.
David, thank you for joining us here. Driving home, drive safely, and I'll talk to you soon, man.
Thank you, Mark.
You got it, David. That is the Scores. David Schuster with the news that Lauri Markkanen, who is fatigued, he is shut down for the rest of the season, the final six games of the year, and things could look similar to what they did tonight in terms of the starters because of the fact that at this point, Zach LaVine out, Otto Porter Jr. out, Lauri Markkanen out, Chris Dunn is out as well. And while I've got it up, too, we're talking about the Bulls and Cavaliers and the fight for third place or third worst in the NBA right now. The Bulls with six games to go. They have the following games: hosting the Raptors, at the Knicks, at the Wizards, host Philadelphia, host the Knicks, at Philadelphia. Cleveland has seven games to go: at the Spurs, host the Clippers, at Phoenix, at Sacramento, at Golden State, host San Antonio, host the Hornets. I do believe Cleveland is in pole position. Well, they are, and they will continue to be, for better or for worse, Bulls fans. That's the way it's going to be. The Bulls still have a chance at the number one pick, but I do believe that they will be shut out of the worst three in the NBA. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we are going to talk with the Scores' Hub Arkish. We'll ask him the question of who has the better safety right now, Adrian Amos with the Packers or HaHa Clinton Dix with the Chicago Bears, because our Milwaukee guest earlier said, hands down, Adrian Amos is the better safety out of those two. We'll ask Hub next on Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
This is Sports Radio 670, The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
We were prepared for every scenario, you know what I mean? So when that happened, his agent was kind of telling us, you know, giving us a heads up that it was heading in that direction. So we were happy for Adrian, you know, and that's going to, as hopefully we draft well and we acquire more players, it's going to happen, you know. Maybe we'll be in a position for a compensatory fix, you know. We've come a long way to be talking about that, you know. So then it was just, okay, our personnel department, Champ Kelly and the guys, doing a really good job of determining, okay, what are our options if this happens.
Bears general manager Ryan Pace right there. Bears. This hour on The Score is being brought to you by Menards. Save big money at Menards. I'm Mark Grody. Hub Arkish works for The Score. He's with Pro Football Weekly as well, amongst a couple of his duties in the world of the National Football League, and he has freshly returned from the owners' meetings in Arizona. Hub, thanks for coming on with us. I know it's late, and I know you probably got to be a little bit tired at this point.
It's always good to be with you. Starting off with Painted Black, man, I haven't heard that in a long time. That made it all worthwhile. So good to catch up with you, Mark.
Oh, yeah, that always sounds good. And there is when you can hear sitar playing, it's always a very good moment. Hub, I had a guest on from Milwaukee a little while ago, Joe Zanzola of 105.7 FM in Milwaukee, and I asked him the question of, at this point, who has the better safety? The Adrian Amos and the Green Bay Packers or HaHa Clinton Dix with the Chicago Bears? And he said, practically cutting me off without hesitation, that it is Adrian Amos, and he can't believe that the Bears would sign HaHa Clinton Dix, who misses tackles, basically saying that he's terrible at this point. Who do you think is the better safety between those two guys at this point?
You know, Mark, the thing that fascinates me about a lot of this debate with a lot of Packer fans and I guess media as well is that when you ask them, well, how much tape have you watched on Adrian Amos? they really don't know what they're getting. They just they have such a strong distaste for Clinton Dix up there. He did not play well the last year and a half, but he also became a target for everything that went wrong with that team as they missed the playoffs 2 years in a row. You know, for the first time in I don't know how long. The reality is that he is not as physical as Adrian Amos. He was early in his career, and he actually has had a lot more, and I do it on average per year because he's been around a year longer, a lot more tackles than Amos. There's no question that Clinton Dix is a much better football player than Adrian Amos. The problem is that he hasn't played to that level for the better part of the last two seasons. What the Bears get is a 26, 27-year-old kid in that situation in a contract year who went out of his way to take less years and less money to come to Chicago so he could take on the Packers. And, yeah, you got a pretty motivated guy. Adrian Amos is a really good kid. He developed well in his 4 years here, but he is at best average, you know. And so I've had this conversation with some Packers people, and they just want to go after Clinton Dix. And then I ask them, well, how much have you seen? Well, we saw Amos play twice a year. it's really, I think that in terms of, you know, where they've been the last season or two, certainly Amos has grown more. Clinton Dix has played some bad football. This is an Antrell role all over again. I think that's the first thing that probably comes to Bears fans' minds. And I don't think so. I think this is a very different situation. Kid is 6 years younger than Roll was. He's healthy. And it'd be very interesting to see how motivated he is. I know in Arizona, both Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy were focused on that, about how bad he wanted to be with the Bears over the other options he had, and how focused he seems to be.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to that. I mean, it's legit in any sport. For better or for worse, players are a lot of times are going to play better when they know that they're going after the big money, and that is the case with Dix, that he becomes a free agent after this year. All right, let's talk about your time in Arizona a little bit. And you are my go-to guy when it comes to discussing the Bears running game and Jordan Howard. And was there any answers that were different from Ryan Pace or from Matt Nagy in terms of what we may or may not see from the running game in the 2019 Chicago Bears?
Well, I wouldn't say anything different. You know, one of the things, Mark, that I really appreciated with Matt, and we got to spend an hour with him yesterday morning, and he really was lucid. It was a great conversation. Everybody was in good spirits. And, you know, I asked him, because we talked about this a couple times during the season, and he was the one who initially brought it up. He was at the podium one day on a Monday and said, you know, one of the things that we have to do as coaches is get a better feel for our running game. And then, you know, he went back to that a few weeks later saying it still wasn't exactly clicking on all cylinders. So I asked him, you know, I said, you know, there's so much focus on the possibility or the likelihood that Jordan Howard will be gone and who you're going to draft and how you sign Mike Davis. Are you guys spending, you know, any time working on the scheme, or is it all about personnel? And he immediately said, no, we're actually spending more time on scheme than we are on the personnel. Mm. And then he went on to kind of indicate that they like everybody they have. You know, I came away 50-50. I just don't know whether Jordan Howard is going to be here this year or not. It's just, they're not going to give him away. I heard them say several things that indicated to me they wanted him here competing with whoever they draft and with Mike Davis. But then you keep coming back to the question of whether he's a fit or not. So, like I said, Mark, I think it's probably 50-50 that they could move on from Jordan Howard or keep him, you know, whether he wanted the glass half full or half empty. They are focused on, you know, why it didn't work as much as whether they have the right players for it.
Yeah, and if they do keep Jordan Howard, you said, you know, in your opinion, 50-50, and then the bringing in of Mike Davis. So you have both of those guys. If Jordan Howard is still around, does that preclude the Bears from taking a running back with their first pick this year in the third round, if it stays that way, I assume?
No, I think there's a good chance that they will, if that's, you know, certainly one of the best players on the board. Ryan Pace talks about this a lot, brought it up again when we talked yesterday. You have to stay true to your board. You got to take the best football player. When you are two or three positions that are close and one of them is a need, You can do that. I think they see us still having a need at running back. They still have a game breaker. I mean, they like what they saw in Davis in terms of he's got a little more make you miss in the hole necessarily than Howard or than Benny Cunningham offered him. I think he's here for that Benny Cunningham's / Taequann Mizell role. And so they still probably are looking for somebody to take Jordan Howard's job away from him. And ideally that would be another guy who's more Nagy style, more like Mike Davis than Jordan Howard. But I don't think that they're committed to they can necessarily accomplish all that in one season. Maybe they find that kid, he's a rookie, and he pushes for playing time and eventually takes it. But, I think they're very sensitive to having gone 12-4, having won the division title, not wanting to go backwards. And so the rebuilding is over now. Now they got to win and make changes as they go. And that's the reason I think they could hang on to Howard, even if they think he's a luxury, because they know, that there's times when he can go off, and he's been a Pro Bowl running back.
Hey, one more before I let you go and get a little bit of rest here. I liked all the signings that Ryan Pace made last year, the receivers that they brought in, the receiver that they drafted in Anthony Miller, obviously getting Trey Burton as one to catch footballs. Allen Robinson had a great connection with him as well. Taylor Gabriel. But could they still use, another big, either big-bodied receiver or tight end? And I only say that because of the rapport that Trubisky seemed to have with Allen Robinson, and that sometimes if your accuracy is a little bit off, a guy like that, big-bodied receivers can help you make up for those types of mistakes. Could they still use another big weapon on offense?
Well, I think they could, Mark, and I think they could use one of both positions, wide receiver and tight end. And I think they're hoping they have a wide receiver. One of the things that people don't realize about Cordero Patterson is that he's 6'2", 228 pounds.
There you go.
I know the Patriots used him in the backfield as a running back some, but he also lined up a receiver for them. He does have elite speed, so he can be that fourth guy who comes and takes the top off the field on the other side from Robinson. Now, he's with his third team in, 6 years, so he's obviously not a complete or a great wide receiver, but he's a great weapon, and you know how Matt Nagy likes to experiment with that. So I think you'll see him occasionally in the backfield, but I think he's that big body you're talking about, a wide receiver. I asked both Matt and Ryan about Adam Shaheen and where he's at. They both are very excited about him. They still think he's got a very high ceiling, but he's got to stay healthy, and he hasn't been able to do that. He's got to stay on the football field. Trey Burton, they love him, but for what he is, he was brought in to be that move tight end. And so I think there's a chance that they will draft another tight end, and it's a very good year to do that. It's a deep class.
And Hub, really quickly, I need a scouting report. There's a guy at the combine that I really like, kind of fell in love with him because we all fall in love with somebody. Hakeem Butler from Iowa State. Big kid. I mean, he's the type of guy. What's your scouting report on Hakeem Butler, and what round does he go in?
You fell in love because you thought you were scouting for the Bulls, huh?
Well, no, you know why? You know what I fell for? The fact that he said he worked out with and talked to Calvin Johnson, and he's built like Calvin Johnson.
Yeah, I don't know if Marcus told you guys yet, but Hakeem Butler is 6'6", maybe 6'6 and a half. He's about 236, 240 pounds. But he is a wide receiver, not a tight end.
Uh-huh.
Although I'm sure some teams might even get the idea of growing him into a tight end. He's got legit 4'6", 4'5", 4'6", being the 4'5s for a guy that big. And he was very productive there. He's also got a little bit of a chip on his shoulder. He doesn't understand why, with his production, his great athleticism and size, he's not thought of or ranked maybe a little higher than he is. Or a real interesting interview with him. So definitely a kid worth keeping an eye on. I don't know that he's a fit for the Bears. I don't think he'll be there in the third round. I think they'd have to trade up and do something about that. But he could very well be a special weapon for somebody.
No doubt. Hub, thanks for your time, man. Get some sleep, and happy opening day of Cubs baseball tomorrow. I know that you will be locked in on that.
I am excited. I love the fact that everybody is trying to find a way to underrate them, and I realize there's a couple question marks that come with them, but we look at how much they've won and how much they're ready to keep winning. I think it's going to be a fun year.
Yeah, well, you talk about chips on the shoulder. The Cubs may have that this year because all of a sudden Milwaukee thinks they're better than the Cubs.
It's funny, but I know you got to go, but I was just thinking about this as I was driving back from the airport. How did everybody forget? It was just 3 months ago that the Brewers and the Cubs finished tied. for the most wins in the National League. You know, this whole perception that the Cubs are in the tank, I don't know where it came from. So hopefully that'll work to their advantage this year.
Hub, have a great night, man. I'll talk to you soon.
Take care.
But that is Hub Arkish of The Score. Love talking to Hub. Hub of Pro Football Weekly as well. You can always find Hub on Twitter at Hub_Arkish. Another thing that the Bears have been doing this year, which I think has been really important, is locking in their offensive line with the restructuring of Kyle Long. I thought it was really important that he come back. I was a little bit concerned that he may not, just because of the cost, but because of the restructuring and hopefully a healthy Kyle Long, it's possible you can get a terrific Pro Bowl type year out of Kyle Long. You have Bobby Massey, who gets the new contract, the extension with the Bears. He's another one of those guys, Bobby Massey. Even as he gets older, he's getting better. He's becoming a better offensive lineman and is just a stalwart for the Bears at right tackle. I don't expect him to be making any Pro Bowls, but I think that he is perfect for that position and worth the extension that he got. That said, Massey, a 5-year, $40 million contract, $15.8 million guaranteed from the Bears, which is obviously a really nice contract and well-deserved. One of the great parts about it, though, is that he probably could have gotten more from somebody, but he wanted to stay with the Bears. It's a relative rarity in sports when you have any player on the open market these days who decides that they just want to be in a place and they don't want to screw. Isn't it refreshing? Like, he didn't even want to deal with shopping himself around and making visits and toying with teams, and he would not have had any or close to the impact as of the guys that we've all been affected by, and those being the Bryce Harpers and the Manny Machados of the world. But his quote was, this is Massey now, from it was Brad Biggs' piece in the Tribune a few days ago. He said, Massey, I don't care. At the end of the day, I was happy with what I got, and I was where I wanted to be. Bears. Wait for a few more pennies? Nah, I'm where I wanted to be. I want to be in Chicago because I know something special is coming. We've got a great team, amazing people in the building. I just love it here. I did not want to leave on that note. That is awesome to hear. He is, and this is, again, from Brad Biggs' piece in the Tribune, the 29-year-old is coming off his best season as a pro and was charged with allowing only 2 sacks last season by Stats. According to Pro Football Focus, he allowed 25 pass pressures, 46 offensive tackles, allowed more. And, I mean, really, all of this comes down to, and the bulk of my conversation with Hobb, it really comes down to, even though we didn't mention his name much, Mitchell Trubisky. And doing everything you have to do in that on that team to continue to make him more comfortable and to make him better, whether that's locking in your offensive line and having like the Bears' offensive line could be one of the better offensive lines in the NFL. And yeah, you could say that you can bring up depth, but really, there's not a lot of depth in any offensive lines around the league. It's a really good offensive line. But it's about building around and making Trubisky comfortable. That's why I talked about, you know, getting another big weapon, even though they signed all those guys last year, getting the running game worked out, doing what you got to do to make Trubisky comfortable. And it's interesting, too, like how the lineup goes with the offensive line is not settled yet, that it is not out of the question that we could see James Daniels move from guard to his college position at Iowa, which was center, and then have Cody Whitehair go back to what was his natural position in college and become a guard. So that is something you're going to see them play with that probably in the OTAs, in the mini camps, and then leading up to Bourbonnais and find out where the comfort is. I'll say this, like for James Daniels last year, it was like a perfect rookie crescendo. Like he started off in Bourbonnais, seemed like he had a lot to learn and not a long way to go, but you know, he wasn't ready to be a plug-and-play player right from the start, even though I think people thought that, you know, considering where he was drafted and all that, that he should be. But eventually he got in there. Eventually he started, has made mistakes, but he really started to maul guys towards the end of the season. And Daniels is going to be a really good player for a lot of years to come in the NFL. At what position, we don't know. But you know you're pretty well set with Bobby Massey. And Charles Leno Jr. is another guy like Bobby Massey, who is even more of an overachiever than Massey. Leno is that, and he gets a little bit better every year, and he is earnest and wanting to get good. And I was always impressed by Leno and the fact that once he got his money a couple of years ago, he didn't feel any sense of relief. He said he actually felt more pressure to be even better, as opposed to maybe the way, you know, any of us would think, like, oh, but you got your cash, you don't have the pressure is off a little bit. You can take care of yourself and your family and all that kind of stuff. But he said he felt even more pressure. So really looking forward to seeing how the offensive line comes together this year. And if they do turn into, you know, one of the better offensive lines in the NFL this year. It's Mark Grody with you, 312-644-6767. Textable at 670-11. Mark, I really like Hakeem Butler as well. Also keep an eye on Iowa State running back David Montgomery in the third round. This is coming from a Hawkeye fan. I don't know much about David Montgomery. I know that there's a couple of guys that it appeared – I know the Bears had a meeting with, and this doesn't necessarily mean a thing, had a meeting with Benny Snell, the running back out of Kentucky. Bryce Love, I can't remember if the Bears talked to him, but he's another guy, Stanford running back, really fast, smaller guy, but a guy who was injured. I believe it was an ACL, a guy who, you know, is going to fall in draft, but probably could have been second or third round, but probably will fall beyond fourth or fifth now because of the injury that he had last year. But he may be just as one of the most talented running backs that exists in the draft this year. All right, need to take a break. Still to come, I still got to go through some of the new Joe Maddon or four Joe Maddon rules, the ones that were spelled out wonderfully in The Athletic. We'll talk about those. I think I can give a little bit of insight because of my time with the Cubs on how this may or may not affect the team. That is coming up, and your calls at 312-644-6767 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Mark Grody till midnight, and Grobber rolls in. I'll stick around with Grobber if you would like me to. Love talking to Grobber. So the new lineup kicks in tomorrow, kind of. Like, the whole cast of characters is not quite here tomorrow, March 28th, opening day for the Cubs and the White Sox. Tomorrow morning, it's going to be Haw and Lou Kanellis, 5 to 9. I see that Lawrence Holmes is one of their guests on the morning show, probably to preview his new show, which we'll get to in a second here. Bernstein and McKnight, 9 a.m. to 12, or 9 to noon, if you will. Len Casper is going to be on the show tomorrow. Lawrence Holmes kicks off his new show, The Debut, from 12 to 2, noon to 2. He is going to have, it looks like, look at this, Kyle Hendricks, Zach Zaidman, and Terry Bors joining him tomorrow on the show. I'm assuming because Terry Bors is so well known for being a baseball guy. Terry is going to be on the debut of the Lawrence Holmes show. Plus, those two have a very good relationship. McNeil and Parkins, they will be on from 2 until 2:30. That's the time that the Cubs take over. After the game, the new night guy, Joe Ostrowski, will be on until 10 p.m. Then the 10 to 12 guy tomorrow, David Schuster. Schuster will be on. Usually that's going to be Julie DeCaro, but it will be David Schuster tomorrow from 10 until 12. And then Les Grobstein never changes, man. He's the overnight guy, midnight until 5. And thank God we will all have real baseball to talk about tomorrow. And let me go through these. I know that you guys heard these probably earlier this week. The new rules set forward for the Chicago Cubs this year. And I'll be a little bit more specific. This is from The Athletic. Full credit to Sahada Sharma and Patrick Mooney, because this is them and only them. This is their diligent reporting over apparently a long period of time. And this is what they say to head it off. According to sources briefed on the team's plans, the Cubs are expected to implement these suggestions, which were suggested by both players and management. Let me go through some of these things. Holding mandatory batting practice 4 or 5 times a week. That's fine. But the theme of what I'm going to be saying right here is that this goes completely against the DNA of Joe Maddon, the manager of the Chicago Cubs. Like, any chance that he had, at least during the time that I was covering the Cubs for 3 years, any chance that he had, and often it didn't even take much prompting for Joe Maddon to talk about how he hated the overdoing of batting practice, that to him it didn't make sense. It wasn't just some whimsical thing that he came up with, some cute joke. It's what he had accrued in all of his years in the Anaheim organization, in managing for Tampa Bay, and then with the Cubs, that he hates the idea of extra batting practice. So keep that in mind, that when they are mandating now that there be more batting practice, keep that in mind. Releasing the lineups on a series-by-series basis, I'm cool with that. And then, you know, obviously that wasn't something Joe Maddon did all the time. A lot of times he would text guys like the night before. If that's what the players need, then I'm cool with that. Circling 10 or so trap games and challenging the group to win all of them. Which, again, on the surface, that is a great idea, but it does kind of go against, like, one of, and I don't know if this is, like, that's a direct shot at Joe's whole Meatloaf, 2 out of 3 ain't bad. That's a Meatloaf song. That's why you hear that sometimes if you need a little bit of whiteboarding on that. 2 out of 3 ain't bad. And generally speaking, throughout Joe Maddon's career, he has won series with whatever team he's been a part of. So, yeah, and that's kind of interesting too. Spending more time in the dugout during games, that's for the players. I think that's cool, and specifically in being ready when the national anthem is sung, fine. Then lastly, there's 2 more bullet points they put. Limiting the amount of alcohol and fast food consumed in the clubhouse on charter flights. There's a little bit more on that one. Players will still be allowed to have a post-game beer and eat what they want, but the Cubs are looking for individual responsibility and personal accountability. Now, this again, and I don't know exactly who enforces. I don't know if they're asking Joe Maddon to enforce this kind of thing more. And I'm not saying Joe just let these guys, you know, do beer bongs on the back of the airplane, but, you know, another thing about Joe is that Maddon does not want to have to deal with that kind of thing, that, you know, his idea is let the players be responsible. He understands that it's a long season. This goes against like what Joe would want to have to mandate for his players. Clearly, that can't be something that he's really pleased with. And then finally, the players should police themselves and making healthy decisions and acting more professionally. That will be a priority, according to what the Athletic is writing here as well. The policing themselves, you know, Joe does this every year. He had done it every year in spring training where he has a meeting with his alphas, you know, and that's really the only time that he's going to talk to them. And then he kind of lets them police what goes on. The only guy that I ever saw like verbally doing it, and not everybody's going to do it in front of the media, the only guy that I saw constantly being a vocal leader was David Ross, and they haven't had that since. Like, David Ross would be a leader, a vocal leader. I saw him doing it in the clubhouse. I saw him doing it on the charters and the buses, and I mean in a positive way, that if something had to be said, David Ross would stand up and bring attention to him and make sure justice was served, so to speak. You know, the Rizzo thing, like, Rizzo is a leader in that clubhouse, but there's always been kind of a myth around Rizzo that since that day in the dugout when he was, what, 24, 25 years old, when he tried to take on the entire Cincinnati Reds dugout, that, oh, man, yeah, Anthony Rizzo, he is absolutely the leader of this team. You know, and he is another one of these guys, too, that, yeah, he is looked up to. There's no doubt about it. And now he's starting to get tenure with the Cubs to where, I mean, Rizzo's 29, man. So I think that he may start to be a little bit more of a vocal guy other than just somebody that other players look up to. But, you know, the fact that it was sort of forced on him that he was a leader by the media, you know, it just wasn't necessarily the case with Anthony Rizzo. I think that the guy, a perfect guy to lead things, and you're hearing it more, is John Lester. He's not a guy that you mess with. He tells it like it is, and he can be vocal as well. But, yeah, it's interesting to see how this all plays out. just some of the things going against what Joe Maddon is all about, I find kind of interesting. But can't wait for it to start for real. Cubs and White Sox both tomorrow. I know Grauber will talk more baseball and Bulls coming up here in just a few minutes. Want to thank Joe Zenzola for being on the show tonight. Hub Arkish was with us. David Schuster, speeding back to the suburbs from the United Center, was on with us as well. Thanks to the producers tonight, Herb Lawrence, Christopher Dickens, and Julio Roseo, I know, helped out as well. Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling. Thanks for texting. Grauber is in the studio. He is next on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.